Welcome to Mobile Estate Planning with your host, Michael Bailey. Over a decade ago, attorney Michael Bailey turned his attention to estate law after he recognized the unacceptable number of adults without proper end-of-life planning. Michael recognizes that many of his clients have difficulty finding the time for making a proper estate plan. That's why he became the Mobile Estate Planner. He will go to wherever you are to assist you with your estate planning, including writing wills, trusts, and giving you the information you need to avoid probate. Now, ATX, Ask the Experts, presents Mobile Estate Planning with your host, Michael Bailey. Papa was a rolling stone. Wherever he laid his hat was his home. And when he died,
only left his brother alone. All right, good afternoon. Welcome to Mobile Estate Planning with Michael Bailey here on 560 KLZ, so we can do something besides just leave your family alone. Phone number to talk to us on the air is 303-477-5600. And my direct number is 720-394-6887. So that 720-394-6887 number, that's my direct line. You can call me, you can tell me, hey, I need to set up my own estate plan. Or, Mike, I'd really like you to talk about this on the air. Or if you want to call and tell me that my advertisements are horrible and that I ought to be dragged out in the street and run over repeatedly by a moped, you can do that too. You know, my producer's back there laughing, but I did get some messages once that told me about how my advertisements were so terrible and so horrible, and how could I possibly live with myself, and how could I sleep at night? And I'm like, I sleep very well.
I made fun of Nebraska.
What's that?
It was because I made fun of Nebraska. I didn't mean any. I was just making a joke. I love Nebraska.
That was only one of them, Dave. I had somebody call me, and they told me that my advertisement was terrible because it's almost Christmas time, and it really should run at Halloween, and I should be ashamed of myself, and it was despicable. And I'm like, wow, really? You called me at 10:30 on a Friday night to yell at me about that? I think maybe you need a life, or at least something else to do with your life besides call me at 10:30. I mean, and all you can do is laugh. What was really funny, though, was when, because he left me a voicemail, and then later on, he called me back, and he says, well, but I really need your help. And I just started laughing, and I'm like, really? You really think that after you've called me and yelled at me about how I'm pathetic and despicable that I want to have you as a client? I think you're confused about how this works. I like to work with people who want to work with me. And granted, not every interaction is going to be pleasant, and not every interaction is going to be we become great friends, but we ought to understand that we're in this together and working on things together and that we're not the enemy. But hey, what do I know, right? Anyhow, so I was thinking, I had somebody earlier this week, and we were talking about something, and she got very confused by what I was talking about. And I realized that I needed to go back and I needed to re-explain some things. And so I did, and she was still confused. And eventually I figured out that one of the words that I was using that has a very specific legal definition was not the same way that she was using that word. And so we had completely confused each other talking about what this legal definition, or, you know, what we were supposed to be talking about. And, you know, I've talked about trusts and understanding roles in trusts. I've talked about wills. But there are certain words that have specific legal meaning, and sometimes they have specific legal meaning in context. And because of that, we sometimes have confusion about what things are supposed to mean or what we're supposed to do. Anyway, even this morning I was talking to some clients, and they're like, well, you know, it says any individual trustee can appoint a co-trustee. So does that mean that, you know, so my sister and my brother are the co-trustees. Does that mean they can each individually appoint somebody else? I'm like, no, it has to be there's an individual trustee serving. They're like, oh, okay, well, that makes sense. And I'm like, yeah, it says there in the first sentence, you know, any individual trustee. It doesn't say co-trustee, it says individual trustee. And so, but apparently one of the co-trustees is very sick, and so the co-trustee is thinking that they want to appoint somebody else to take their place, but that's not allowed for in the trust. So, you know, there's just some confusion that goes on there. And I think sometimes people see that in the context of a, I mean, it's almost like it's being written into a sitcom. And so when you see it, when it happens to somebody else, it's hilarious. It's funny. It's, oh, look at this silly misunderstanding. And the nice part is, and on TV sitcom, it's all wrapped up within a half an hour and everybody's happy and things like that. But, and it's a very frequent plot device. But there's also times where when it happens to you, it's not nearly as confused. It's not nearly as funny because it's happening to you. Maybe down the line it will be funny, but it's not nearly as funny when it is happening to you. And so one of the things that I find from the other client appointment I had this morning was that I had a guy who, as I talked to him, he was confused about something that was written into his trust and what he was supposed to do. And I go, okay, well, we'll talk about that. And we had all sorts of different things that are set up. And he's like, oh, I don't quite understand that. What does that mean? So I had to explain to him what it meant. He's like, oh, okay, well, that makes sense. And then we kind of got started talking about our kids and how our kids can be confused and how our kids can be sometimes it's just hard to know how to, explain things to our kids and how, my children use phrases that apparently I am not cool enough or I am not awesome enough to use. So, like my 10-year-old uses the word yeet. And apparently yeet means to throw something and or it's just kind of an expression of coolness. And so she's actually just started reading the Harry Potter books. And so she was talking about the part of Harry Potter where Harry Potter's at the zoo and he's talking and he's there and he doesn't know that he's a wizard yet and he doesn't know that he can speak partial tongue, which is snake language for those who haven't read Harry Potter. And so because he is magical and he just doesn't know it, he removes the glass and then says, and the snake says, thank you, and Slither's away. Well, the way that my daughter reported this was, so Harry Potter made the glass disappear and the snake was like, yeet, I'm out of here. I'm like, I don't think that the word yeet appeared in that particular book. But she was pretty excited that she got to use the word yeet. And I'm not cool enough to use the word yeet. It's kind of like my wife tried to describe something to them. She's like, yeah, it was sick. They're like, yeah, Mom, you can't use that. You're not cool enough. You're old and uncool. I'm like, no, we used sick when we were in high school. And, something was sick and or wicked bad. And you're like, yeah, that doesn't sound quite, if someone came up to you and said, hey, you're going to be sick, you'd be, that's not good. Or something is wicked bad. It's very wicked. It's very bad. You're like, yeah, I don't know that I want that. But in this context, sick or wicked bad seemed like it was really awesome and really cool. Well, yeah, there's different interpretations of words and context matters. I mean, I remember years ago, saw the movie My Cousin Vinny. And in My Cousin Vinny, the kid is on trial and the lawyer is reading back the transcript and he says, and so the question was, what happened? And you responded, I shot the sheriff. I shot the sheriff. I shot the sheriff. Now, from the beginning of the movie, it went, so what happened? He says, you're saying I shot the sheriff? I shot the sheriff? I shot the sheriff? Now, there's a slightly different meaning and a slightly different understanding of those two phrases between I shot the sheriff and I shot the sheriff. One, obviously you're admitting something. The other one, you're incredulous and denying it. So, different meanings, different interpretations. Same thing happens in the law. And so you are listening to Mobile Estate Planning with Michael Bailey here on 560 KLZ The Source, also heard on 1220 AM, 100.7 FM, 95.3 FM, 560thesource.com, and the TuneIn app. Phone number to talk to us on the air is 303-477-5600. And my direct line is 720-394-6889. H7. So I was at my my 12, almost 13-year-old daughter's basketball game. And I was we're at the basketball game. And the other parents know that I'm a basketball official. They understand that I am I referee high school basketball. So they're always very sure that I can answer any and all questions about what the referees did or did not call and why they did or did not call something, and that I should be responsible for what the referees did or did not call. This is a long-standing thing that's gone back to when my daughter was playing basketball in, like, first grade, and there was one parent in particular, and he was very vocal about his disagreement with the refs, and he was very upset about, you know, everything. And so after the game, he says to me, he's like, well, you know, the refs were just inconsistent, just like all refs, right? And I looked at him and said, you don't have no clue how I do or do not officiate, and you have no clue about what I do or do not call or what I do or do not call, and you have no clue about how I should or should not react, and I have no responsibility for these two referees. And he says, well, yeah, typical, you'd stand up for him. I said, I didn't stand up for him at all. And if you're going to be a complete and total, I use some words that I won't use on the air, then let's go. And I laid into him for about 3 minutes. And his wife walks and says, whoa, that was uncalled for. I said, he started it, I finished it. They didn't come back, and I didn't miss them. But the particular parents this day, they weren't quite that bad. But there was a play where an official, there was a player was dribbling up near the half court, and another player set a pick, and they kind of hit each other, and the defender kind of pushed the other one off. And the defender was much bigger than the girl that they pushed off, so the smaller one stumbled backwards. And this parent says to me, well, what would you have there? And I said, I probably would have had an offensive foul. He's like, well, wouldn't it be a technical foul? No, it would not be a technical foul. Well, why not? It was really bad. You should know that. You're an official. Okay. Whoa. Okay. Let's stop for just a second. Number one, technical foul has to either be unsporting or it has to be during dead ball action. This was during live ball action. It wasn't an unsporting action. Had there been enough contact, it could have been an intentional foul, but it didn't rise to the level of being an intentional foul, so it's just a simple, common offensive foul. And he goes, well, you didn't think it was intentional? You don't think she meant to do that? How would you know? How could you possibly? Obviously, she meant to shove her. You knew that. You know that. How are you so stupid? Wow. We've gone from I officiate basketball and you didn't like the call that was on the court to suddenly I'm stupid. We've really kind of ratcheted things up here, haven't we? I said, look, I'm sure that she meant to do it, but it does not rise to the level of an intentional foul. Well, yeah, that means she meant to do it. You don't even know the meaning of words. Oh, okay. Let's go, sir. Game on. Let's do this. An intentional foul is a personal or technical foul that may or may not be premeditated and is not solely based on the severity of the act. Intentional fouls include, but are not limited to, contact that neutralizes an opponent's obvious advantageous position, contact away from the ball with an opponent who is clearly not involved with the play, contact that is not a legitimate attempt to play the ball or the player specifically, designed to stop the clock or keep it from starting, excessive contact with an opponent where the ball is live or where an airborne shooter returns to the floor, or contact with a free thrower who is still out of bounds. Sir, could you please tell me which of those definitions apply to an intentional foul? He gave me a blank look. And I said, that's the rule book definition of an intentional foul. Please explain to me how the situation on the floor qualifies for any of those. Well, that's just stupid. No. That's the rule. I just quoted it word for word from the rule book, which I happen to have in front of me to read right now, but I didn't have it at that point, but I do have that part memorized. And so he says, well, basketball is just different than when I played, probably. I'm like, yeah, it is. You are correct, sir. And he was so sure that he knew what he was talking about that it didn't bother him or matter to him at all that you have to apply the rule. and that the rule is written is not what you may think it is. So I said, well, you know, neutralizes an opponent's obvious advantageous position. Nope, that didn't happen. Contact away from the ball with an opponent who's clearly not involved in the play. It was a pick. They were involved in the play. It's not a legitimate attempt to play the ball and specifically designed to stop the clock or keep it from starting. Well, the clock kept running, so I don't think that was quite working. Excessive contact with an opponent. It was kind of normal contact. It looked worse than it was. And then there was no free thrower. Nobody was throwing in. So it doesn't apply. But he got hung up on the word intentional, because an intentional foul has this very specific meaning under a basketball term. So an intentional foul doesn't mean that somebody didn't mean to foul. An intentional foul doesn't mean that somebody was walking around swinging their arms and oops, somebody got in the way. It has a very specific meaning. And part of the reason it has that very specific meaning is because it has a very specific penalty. If you commit an intentional foul, the player who you fouled gets 2 shots and their team gets the ball back. That's a pretty significant penalty. A penalty for a common offensive foul is that the team that had the ball loses the ball and gives it back to the other team. You know, these are slightly different penalties. In one case, you lose the ball, give it back. The other one, you have 2 free throws and the ball, so you have the chance to score 4 to 5 points. So it can be a very different, it can be a very big swing, and that's part of why you're very careful about as an official, I'm very careful about when do I call an intentional foul. I don't call it just to call an intentional foul. I call it because it was, it meets one of these situations. And, people get, bent out of shape about things like at the end of a game, if a team is down, they're going to foul in an attempt to get the other team to shoot free throws, hopefully miss 1 or 2, and then go down and try to make a 3-pointer to make up the time. It's an accepted basketball strategy. And so we always talk about the difference between a strategic foul and an intentional foul. At the end of a game, team is down, we're pretty sure they're going to foul. We know they're going to foul. And we'll tell players, hey, make sure you make a play on the ball. Don't do anything stupid. And we will warn them. Don't, commit a strategic foul, not an intentional foul. And in doing so, we try to keep the game fair. We try to keep the game moving. And we try to make sure that we're using the rules as written here properly. Now, most people who have played basketball, they're pretty sure they know the rules of the game. And they're pretty sure that they know how things work. That may not quite be the case with the legal system. Most people may think they know how they think the legal system should work, but not necessarily how it does. So my job as a basketball official is to take the rules as written and to apply them to the game so that the game is played within the rules. And there's a bunch of very specific rules in here. My job as a basketball official is very similar to my job as an attorney. So as an attorney, I take the rules as written and we figure out how to apply them so that we can achieve the outcome that you want. The rules of what needs to go into a will or how does a trust work or, who can be, what can an attorney do? What can somebody else do? All of those type of things, those all become parts of an estate plan, because we have to take the rules, we have to apply them to your situation and your desired outcome to make sure that they work for you. And so, as an official and as an attorney, I'm trying to make sure that we can have the outcome that you want come. I try not to, I don't know that I could affect the outcome of a game as an official. There are those who will disagree, but I try very hard not to affect the outcome of a game. I just try to, when something happens on the court, I'll blow my whistle and I'll announce what happened and we'll all move on. As an attorney, I try to say, okay, here's the rules. Here's how we can fit inside of the rules so that you can get what you want. That's how we do it. That's how estate planning works. But they're similar. And so this is Mobile Estate Planning with Michael Bailey. You're listening on 560 KLZ, The Source. Also heard on 1220 AM, 95.3 FM, 100.7 FM. the 560thesource.com. Sorry, I can't even know that. Don't even know the website of the station. It's 560thesource.com. And the TuneIn app. Phone number to talk to us on the air is 303-477-5600. And my direct line is 720-394-6887. So as an example of one of those rules that everybody's pretty sure they understand, but a lot of people don't, is the traveling rule. Now, having understanding that in the NBA, traveling hardly, if ever, gets called, and partially I can understand that because in the NBA game, you have supreme athletes. They're moving super quick. They're moving super fast. You know, you got lots of contact and what's illegal, what's legal, you know, and players running into each other and trying to block shots and all this type of stuff. There's a lot of action to be concerned about that sometimes I think the feet get missed a little bit. Now, I'm not trying to excuse the actions or, you know, calls or non-calls of the officials in the NBA. They're a lot better than I am. They're trained all the time. They're full-time officials. They are awesome and good for them. And, you know, I know it's always fashionable to blame the referees and, oh, that was a terribly officiated game and so on and so forth. And I'm like, have you ever said it was a terribly officiated game that was slanted away from your team? No, didn't think so. It's amazing how that works. But the traveling rule is people are like, oh, that was three steps. That was this many steps. And I'm like, the traveling rule doesn't say anything about steps. It says that if you have established a pivot foot, then you can lift the pivot foot and pass or shoot. So if you lift the pivot foot, you can pass or shoot, and it's not traveling until the pivot foot returns to the ground. This is where we get the concept of steps. So let's say that you're on a fast break, and you pick up the ball, you step with your left foot. That's your pivot foot. Then you step with your right foot, and then you shoot a layup. Well, your left foot never came down to the ground, so it's not a travel. That's the concept of steps, one step, two step. Well, what happens if you pick up the ball when you're in the air, and then you land on both feet? Either foot can be the pivot foot. So let's say you start pivoting on your right foot, and then you step with your left foot, and you pass the ball. It's not a travel until that right foot comes down. So we as officials, we are trained and look to find out which foot is the pivot foot. And we're not counting steps and all of those type of things. But lots of people are like, oh, he took three steps. Well, maybe he probably picked up the ball while it was in the air, then established a pivot foot and took another step and then shot. That's not a travel. If you want to make the argument that he picked up his dribble before he was in the air, we can have that conversation. If you pick up your dribble and your right foot's still on the ground, and then you jump onto your left foot and then you jump back onto your right foot, it's a travel when you land back on that right foot. And you can actually, you know, so if you're pivoting like on your left foot and then you pick up your right foot and you think you're going to shoot and then you don't, and you're like, oh, I need to find somebody to pass. You can stand there on one foot, you know, with your right foot up in the air, waving it around. You look goofy. You look silly. But it's not a travel until that foot comes down. And there's lots of people who don't quite understand that rule and who are pretty sure that that's not the rule. And I've had many a coach argue with me that that's not the rule. And my response is, well, it's written in the rule book that way, so we call it that way. And in estate planning and in the law in general, there's a lot of people who have an idea of how they think the rule should be or how they've heard the rule or how they thought the rule was explained to them at some point. And lots of people like to tell me that that's not the rule and that I've got it wrong. And I say, okay, I'm perfectly happy to have that discussion with you. And then you get the person who's like, oh, well, you know, show me in the statutes where it's written that way. And I'm like, well, that's not in the statutes. That's in the case law, and that's how it works itself out. Well, show it to me. I'm like, well, I'd be happy to show it to you, but I have to charge you my hourly rate to go look it back up and, you know, prepare the research for you so that you'll believe me. And it's not that I'm against showing people where things are at. It's just my job is to... My job is to know the rules and to you have them available to be applied properly. And so, I mean, in this And in the same way that the gentleman who had played basketball, you know, 30, 40 years ago, you know, when I played, it was 20 years ago. And yes, the game was a little bit different then. And when we go that we when we talk about, you know, so a lot of people, you know, a lot of people don't have a lot of experience with estate planning. They don't necessarily, you know, I mean, in basketball, lots of people have played basketball. Lots of people have, you know, and they have a level of understanding that is admirable. There's a level of, and, you know, there can be disagreements on this, but those of us who work hard to become better officials, there's, you know, we try very hard to learn the rules as written, not as we apply them as a player or as a coach. And those are different things. And so, you know, and a lot of people who are doing estate planning, they don't necessarily understand the rules that cover estate planning. They're not, you know, in a rule book, I can grab my rule book. It's the rules themselves are 70 or they're 67 pages long. The rule book itself is 77 or 87 pages long, but there's only 10 rules. There's all sorts of subsections to rules and everything else. But, you know, there's, if there's 77 pages worth of rules and subsections and all of those type of things, there's a lot to know and a lot to understand and a lot to apply. When you go to play basketball, like my kids do, or even like I did in high school, I didn't really know or care about the 77 pages worth of rules. I knew about a double dribble. You can't dribble and then stop and then dribble again without an interruption. I knew about, you know, scoring. I knew about playing defense. But there's a lot of rules that I didn't know and I didn't understand. Now, as an estate planning attorney, my job is to know the rules so that we can apply them and have them work for you so that we can have a good outcome of what you want. And so, you know, those are my lessons from my daughter's basketball game and how they apply to estate planning. You know, maybe they apply, maybe they don't, but to me, it looked like a fun thing to talk about. So thanks so much for listening to Mobile Estate Planning with Michael Bailey here on 560KLZ. My phone number is 720-394-6887. John Rush and Rush to Reason are up next. I will talk to you next week. Thanks so much for listening, and bye.
Mobile Estate Planning with Michael Bailey will return to ATX next Wednesday at 2:30 here on KLZ 560 The Source, AM 560, FM 100.7, and online at 560thesource.com.
The views and opinions expressed on KLZ 560 are those of the speaker, commentators, hosts, their guests, and callers. They are not necessarily the views and opinions of Crawford Broadcasting or KLZ Management, employees, associates, or advertisers. KLZ 560 is a Crawford Broadcasting God and Country station.